Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ed Ackerley, and I'm joined in studio today by my good friend. Happy Monday morning to you, Sixto Molina.
Good morning, Ed.
We've been on a long journey together the last 5.5 years. We're running for mayor, and now we're jumping in and doing a radio show. It's kind of fun, isn't it?
Always fun to be around you because you don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah, I keep thinking that I keep dragging him to do things that I do because I have withdrawal when I don't get enough Sixto in my life. So today's theme is a wonder at the University of Arizona in preparing the 5 days that we have. Monday is the wonder day of the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona. One of my bosses at the university once said that if you would stack U of A up with the other cities in Arizona, it'd be like the sixth largest city in Arizona by population. It's just so many people are engaged. I call it the elephant in the room. Without the U of A right in the middle of our community, we would be we'd be kind of an interesting town. What would we have without the U of A? So I'm a big proponent of the U of A and what's going on and the positive things that are happening there. And today we have a good friend of the Social and Behavioral Sciences School, which we were talking earlier that I teach a class out of the SBS College as well. This is Dr. Brian Mayer. Welcome.
Good morning, Ed. Good morning, Sixto. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you get to act as the chair of the sociology department right now, right?
Yeah, I have the reins for about a year and a half of the sociology department.
Yeah, how's that being the department head in a big school like the sociology department at the U of A?
It's an amazing opportunity. We have really fantastic faculty and amazing students, and getting to set some of the agenda and help promote their work. I think I'm here today to talk mostly about my work, but right. We have a number of other really amazing folks that are doing really interesting things, and helping them be successful is a good opportunity.
I talk about, I'm having been at the university myself for 33 years. It's amazing. I actually, we got started this semester just this past week, and I always tell my students at the beginning that the very end of my first introductory class, I talk to them about what a privilege it is I feel of being able to stand in front of them and teach them about marketing and advertising and creativity and communication, how important that is to them, but how privileged I feel about it. You probably feel the same way about being in front of those young people.
Huh? That's why I do what I do. Right. Is providing that opportunity for those young people that are fantastic, inspiring people that are going to go on and change the world. And so who wouldn't want to be a part of that?
Right. It's really a blessing. And especially 5, 10, 15 years later when they send you a note and say, I just wanted to touch base with you and let you know what you meant in my own personal life.
This semester, I am writing so many letters of recommendation for law school. There's going to be some fantastic lawyers out there, and hopefully good lawyers.
That's great. Well, how did you get to the University of Arizona? What's your journey, and why did you gravitate towards Tucson and the University of Arizona and the sociology department?
Yeah, so that's a long story. Let's do it quickly. I grew up in Southern California, and I went to the University of California at Santa Cruz, go banana slugs. there, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. I thought I wanted to save the environment through the law. And I took a bunch of courses like that. And it turns out the questions that I was interested in was really, why do people do what they do? Why is there pollution? Why do we recycle? And those weren't legal questions, right? Mm-hmm. They were societal questions. They were questions about behavior. So I took courses in sociology. I had a fantastic instructor, Dr. Andy Saz, there that said, you should go on and get a PhD in sociology. I have a really good friend that's doing this amazing work at Brown University in Rhode Island. And I said, where's that? I wasn't a geography major. And so I applied and I got in my truck and I drove cross country to Rhode Island, where I got my PhD in sociology from Brown. My first job from there was at the University of Florida. I was there for 6 years doing lots of research on disasters like the 2010 BP oil spill, later Hurricane Sandy. And a job opportunity became available here at the University of Arizona. This is a very well-known and respected and highly ranked sociology department with amazing graduate students. So it was a bit of a step up. And in the meantime, my wife and I would always vacation in northern Arizona and southern Utah. We would spend all of our hard-earned money to spend a week or two out here. So right. We said, well, rather than flying out, why don't we try and live there? And so here we are. And that was in 2012. And so now I'm the director of my department. It's been a good journey.
And how did you get that selection and appointment as the director? Obviously, it came available and they tapped you on the shoulder. But how did that all come about?
So it's, you know, last person standing. No, I think part of my approach to my work is that I like to give back. I like to be part of an institution. Academics involves both doing your own research, teaching, as well as service. And some people enjoy it more for the independence that it brings, right? I want to do research in some part of the world, and so I'm going to go disappear there for as long as I can and then come back and teach. I think what makes me happy is building something, helping grow the institution, providing new opportunities, whether or not it's for our faculty or for our students. And so I'm happy to do it. But that's a little rare, I think, amongst academics, and that's okay.
Yeah, well, that's a good, noble mission, because these young people are so full of energy and so full of life and so full of vision for the future. It's really kind of neat to be an instructor at the university and be able to share that. Of course, you're a research professor. We're a University of Arizona is a Research One institution. What does Research One institution mean when we say that it's a Research One institution?
Well, that means we bring in a certain amount of external funding to do research. I don't think I could recall the exact $1 million mark, hundred something.
Yeah.
And so that
significant,
means a significant amount right. of the work that we do. And we are the flagship university in Arizona. And so we're sort of known for training PhD students, making them part of the active research agenda that we have going on across the whole university.
And we're also a land grant university. Right. And so that does make us the largest academic structured, maybe not by population, but by volume of research being done and the amount of money being done and the amount of land that's available. U of A has land all over the state that they control for agriculture and other reasons. So it's pretty impressive. And, we have the largest freshman class ever in the history of the university this year. So
highest standards, highest qualified, best grades, right. Best SAT scores and all of that. It's a great group.
Yeah, and we got the new honors pavilion, the big honors building, and all those honors students are over there. So a lot of good things happening. Well, we'll take a break here. We're talking with Dr. Brian Mayer, the head of sociology at the University of Arizona College of Social and Behavior Sciences. And when we come back, we're going to talk about poverty in the Tucson Field Workshop. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ed Ackerley, and I'm joined in studio today by Sixto Molina, who's co-hosting with me today. Welcome back, Sixto.
Thank you, Ed. Glad to be here.
We are talking today about Wonder at the University of Arizona, and our guest in studio is Dr. Brian Mayer, who is the head of the sociology department at the University of Arizona College of Social and Behavior Sciences. And one of the great little projects you're working on is something we call applied learning, where you have students help you help do a project that you give them the framework for, and they get to go out and work in the community and do some fun things. Tell us about the Poverty in Tucson Field Workshop and the results that the students came up with in their presentation.
So this is a project that we formed back in 2015. It was in partnership with the city of Tucson. So imagine that you were former mayor Jonathan Rothschild,
right?
And he had just been elected 2011, moving into 2012. The results of the 2010 census, the big 10-year data collection that the federal government does, just came out. And it ranked Tucson the eighth poorest city of its size, about 500,000 people. 25% of every household in Tucson at that time would be below the federal poverty threshold. 33% of every kid growing up in Tucson. The numbers have come down since then. And so Mayor Rothschild forms a commission to bring together various stakeholders, nonprofits, agencies, and whatnot. And I think smartly asked the University of Arizona, can you help? Can we find some way to collect local data that goes into more detail than we can just get from federal data sets like the census? And perhaps his hypothesis was that it wasn't that bad. that the cost of living here in Tucson is lower compared to San Francisco or New York City. And we measure poverty at the federal level at the same way.
Right.
And so I think that was a really good question. So through that invitation to get involved with the city at that point in 2012, we started this data collection project. And when I took it over in 2015, said, you know what, we're doing this. We have hundreds of students that are taking courses like Poverty in American Cities. And we put them in a lecture hall and they read some books and they watch some movies and maybe they cry, maybe they learn something. But oh my gosh, just outside those doors is the eighth poorest city of its size. How can we connect those two dots? And so what we did is we created this course, the Poverty in Tucson Field Workshop, that does a couple of things. It trains students on understanding what are some of the causes and consequences of poverty. It gives them the toolkit on how to conduct a survey, how to do an interview. And then every year since then, minus 2020, which we skipped in the pandemic, we go out and we interview about 300 low-income households spread across town and say, how are you doing? How are you getting by? What strategies are you utilizing to make your life better? What do you hope for? What do you aspire to? And then we can hand those data back over to the city, the county, or the various nonprofits and say, here's how you might help those people better.
And it's interesting in this particular report that was given by the latest group of students that the city and even the county and maybe even the state is staring down the reality of the emergency rental assistance program, where a lot of folks that were struggling financially got some assistance during COVID, and those funds are running out or have run out for many of them, and many of them are seeing a rate increase for their rent as much as a couple hundred dollars. And so this is a good, the research is good to bring to the attention of those folks that are leading our city about what the reality is of these people that are at that poverty level or below.
Absolutely. As we know, I mean, we've all been touched by COVID financially in one way or another, some more than others. And this emergency rental assistance program, what a huge national experiment in affordable housing to say so many people are going to be pushed out onto the streets, which we have seen a dramatic spike in the number of people experiencing homelessness in Tucson. But how many thousands, tens of thousands of other people are right at that cusp? And by being able to provide temporary assistance to them to stay housed, what is the good that that can achieve? So we're both trying to document that. We ask, what did getting, we call it ERAP, emergency rental assistance, what did that do for you? Things that it did, food on the table, keeping kids in the same school, keeping kids clothed, not having to change jobs. Those are all very important things to keep
going. Going to the doctor that they might not do if they didn't have the money to do it.
Right. Getting your prescriptions filled.
Right.
All of these things. And so, yes, we're moving past the pandemic at this point. We hope people are employed or stably so. But you identified one critical thing that was very different back when we got started in 2012, moving into 2015, and that's the rent. If you look today at average rent, fair market rent for a one-bedroom apartment, right now, $1,200 a month. A two-bedroom apartment, $1,500 a month. You cannot afford that on minimum wage. Right. Absolutely not.
Right. Sixto, you were bringing up a point about law enforcement and as we deal with people, that as we deal with people in poverty and people that are facing homelessness even, about how that affects a police officer. So you were going to ask a question about that?
Yes. I'll preface it by making a statement. I was a cop for 35 years, and most of the time that I was a cop, I worked in the poorer neighborhoods. And what I saw was people repeatedly going to jail. So the city has a policy. I don't know if it's still in effect, but it's a crime-free addendum policy that if you are an ex-felon or a felon from prison or jail, that you couldn't live in certain areas. So these people then were relegated to live in some slum areas. So now you get another felon, maybe from a rival gang, because in prisons they have gangs, and now you have two felons living in the same apartment complex, and they were rivals in prison, they're still going to be rivals out on the street. And one might threaten the other. In fact, they do threaten each other and their families. They get into a tussle. There's a killing or a stabbing or a shooting. And I saw this pattern over and over again. And people ask, gee, why is this apartment complex such a rat hole? Well, that's, in my opinion, that's a reason, because our public policy is pushing people into conflict situations. And so whether they want to have a conflict or not, they're going to have it.
Well, I think there's a concentration of a number of things. It could be crime and violence, but it's also a lack of opportunity. So I would say there is the impact of having a felony on your record, right? When you submit your housing application to the rental company, they're going to be able to see that and say no in some cases.
Correct.
But also eviction records, right? It's very hard to get that taken off of your record. A number of organizations have tried to make it easier for tenants. Even during the pandemic, if they were unable to pay the rents, face an eviction, where do they go next? What is going to be that rental facility, that complex, that building that's going to accept felons, going to accept people with evictions on their records? I think we can kind of think about where they are in Tucson, but it's a concentration of disadvantage and all the things that come along with that. Does a Fry's or an Albertsons want to build a new store there? No. So where do they go to find fresh food? Farther? A corner store, schools, other opportunities. And so you definitely see this concentration of disadvantage based on a number of things. And I would throw both eviction records as well as felonies in there.
Well, this is really a neat project. And we talk about applied learning and how students at the University of Arizona get to actually dig into the data and be part of the data and look at the data, interpret the data, and present the data. And that's what this is all about, is them getting that sense for that. So tell us just a little bit about your theory of applied learning and why that is so important for the growth and development of the young folks that are in your charge in the sociology department.
Yeah, this is something that I feel very passionately about. I've been able to work with you, Ed, a little bit on, mm-hmm. on transforming some of your courses to bring in this experiential, right, sort of this learning by doing. And, you know, I think we've always had internship opportunities, but what we're trying to do is create more of those across the student's curriculum, across their experiences. And the data show that you can improve learning outcomes. You can improve critical thinking skills. But you can also move into other things that we might put into the realm of affect, caring, civic engagement, having some human development skills. I think for my course, what's amazing is asking these young people to, prior to the pandemic, knock on a door and say, hi, I'm from the University of Arizona. You don't know me, but I want to talk about your life with you. That doesn't get taught in the average college classroom. But when they go into the job market and they're applying for jobs, that's what I think employers are looking for. So we're both trying to, you know, teach the smarts, right? The classroom skills, but putting that into an applied environment.
Well, we thank you for what you do for the young people at the University of Arizona and for what you do for people like me who are teaching and invigorating our courses. We've been talking with Brian Mayer, who is the department chair for sociology at the College of Social and Behavior Sciences at the University of Arizona, talking about the Poverty in Tucson Field Workshop. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM. The Voice. We'll be back in just a minute with the second half of Wonder at the University of Arizona. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Ed Ackerley. I'm joined in the studio with my guest host, Sixto Molina. Our guest today is, for this portion, is Chloe Patterson. She's a senior in marketing at the Eller College of Management at the University of Arizona. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, thank you for coming in today, and we appreciate you coming to talk to us about a class, I'm sure, with your favorite professor of all time, right?
Of course.
Yeah, good-looking, handsome, all those good things that you can describe. But you're in my Applied Advertising class, Marketing 425. What got you to the University of Arizona? What got you to a marketing degree, and why did you choose to take this class?
So I've always been really interested in business from a young age. I've always had a bit of an entrepreneurial spirit, and I knew I wanted to pursue business throughout my college experience. So I knew I didn't want to stray too far from home since I'm from California. So I was looking at Arizona, and obviously Eller College of Management is an excellent school. So I was super excited to be able to come to the University of Arizona and study business.
And why did you choose to take the applied advertising class in your marketing degree?
So I was kind of looking at all of the different electives, and I'm definitely interested in advertising, but I really like that you get real world experience. We're not just learning, which obviously learning is valuable, but we're going to be able to apply these in a real world setting. So that was what the draw was for me for this class.
So we have a little project that we're working on in class. There's 22 students in the class. They're all seniors in marketing, and we have a little agency set up, and we have Kelly Callahan is the agency director, and we have four directors that are doing different parts of it. You're on the PR team, and tell us what the goal is for the PR team as you try and get some publicity for our project and for what we're doing.
Actually, I'm on the creative.
I'm creative team.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I'm creative director, and basically we are, as we just learned about Ogilvy in class, right, having big ideas to do marketing strategies. So we're really trying to get creative with how we can draw students to our, whether it be event that we end up doing, trying to find creative ways to draw them in and really make them pay attention, especially on a college campus. There's so many things going on, and we really want to be able to grab their attention and get them interested about our project.
So our project is for the Department of Homeland Security and a college challenge that they have called Invent to Prevent. And the major focus of it is to try and take something like hate speech or domestic terrorism and try and mitigate that on a campus. And so we've had some discussions in our class about what some of the things. So what are some of the topics that the students were talking about that we might tackle as we make that decision of which direction we're going to go?
Yeah, so we definitely are looking for issues that, like targeted violence and terrorism, as well as hate speech. So we have brainstormed doing a project on assault, or the project that was done last semester was on violence, specifically gun violence, I believe, which was super relevant to what had happened the year prior at the University of Arizona. And we have thought about different, like, sexual assault and things like that as well.
And so the idea behind this is to give the students an applied learning activity. And there's even some budget involved with this. There's a couple thousand dollars that are given by the Department of Homeland Security. So you guys are actually dealing with real topics that affect real students at real campuses across America. And you've got real money to spend in order to make that package come alive. How does that, you said that early on that applied learning, that one of the reasons you came to the U of A was to get that hands-on experience. So what are you looking forward to in this project, and what the results might be?
So I think it's definitely going to be a little, not uncomfortable, but definitely pushing us out of our comfort zones, because we've never done things like this before. We've never actually put a project and made it real in the real world. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the different roadblocks that we may hit and actually seeing, you know, how things work. Mm-hmm. And being able to use our critical thinking skills and work past it and succeed in the end.
So this is a good example of what Dr. Romero was just talking about with his group of sociology students working on the Poverty Project. Chloe's a great example, creative director of a little agency and a student run little project that they're working on. And by the way, they do it all by themselves. I don't give them any direction other than the framework and point them in the direction they come up with. This is a unique and interesting way to learn how to do things.
Well, let me throw another project at you.
Okay.
And get your thoughts. So nationally, police have an image problem. So the cops across the country are trying to re-image themselves. What would you recommend that they do? And I'll give you some things, tell you some things that changed their image. There's a couple things. In 2000, there was a lot of debate about over-militarization of the police department. If you see the police now, most of them are wearing outer vests with all kinds of police regalia hanging from their vest. They got two phones, radios, extra handcuffs. Prior to 2000, most of the officers wore dress uniforms with the tie and the shirt. And some of the chiefs at the time thought, okay, this is going to get us in trouble. The next thing that happened is cops used to be clean shaven. Now, many of them wear beards. Your thoughts about how to reimage police?
So I think that obviously their image has changed, not only because times are changing, and I think there has been a lot of negative media shown about cops, and with the rise of social issues, obviously cops are trying to mitigate that the best that they can, but at the end of the day, there's no really being able to mitigate that. But I think that mitigating that is why people are being a little bit more violent to cops, because, you know, it really is a hard job. But I think being able to show the positive of, like, what they actually, the good with the bad, obviously, is going to help, like, bring up their image for sure. And
That's really a good point. You know, we have, 6 and I will be interviewing Chris Olson, the new police chief at the University of Arizona, and Steve Patterson, who's the special assistant to the president on the re-outfitting the security protocol for the University of Arizona. And this whole image of what the police are. And this could be something that could be in part of the applied learning that you do for the campaign if you choose campus violence like they did last semester. By the way, last semester they got honorable mention for the United States. They were in third place, and that's a really good thing. And so I've challenged you guys this year to see if we can't to take the prize again. We've won a couple of times over the years. So so your thoughts on the future of your own education and how this applied learning will help you into the future, and what is Chloe going to do in the future?
So I definitely think that this will really give me the skills to enter the workforce. Obviously, the majority of the class are seniors in their final semester of college and going to be getting out there working. And I think this class will really set me up with the skills I need for a real job and to be able to be pragmatic about that. Ideally, after graduation, I would like to work in fashion marketing, and advertising is a big part of that, obviously. And I really think it would be fun to do advertising for fashion companies. And
that's fantastic. Well, we look forward to great things out of Chloe Patterson and from the Marketing 425 students at the University of Arizona. And you're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Sixto Molina is here with me. My brother Bill Ackerley's in for this segment. And on the line with us is somebody that's pretty special to both Sixto and I, Coach Scott McKee. Scott is a standout player in high school here in Tucson, went on to the University of Arizona and played. And then for the last many years has been a high school coach at Pueblo, at Saguaro High School, the last couple of years helping out Dusty Peace over at Canyon de Laurel. Welcome to Jump in Tucson, Scott McKee.
Hey, it's great to hear from you, Doc, and that's awesome. You got Mr. Molina there too, Chief Molina. That's really good. That's two really good quarterback that I got to coach out of that family, both families there. Yeah. Between you and
thank you, Scott.
Mr. Molina.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's been a kind of an exciting couple of days. The Jump in Tucson on Monday is about wonder at the University of Arizona, and lots of people wonder about what happened to our previous coach, but good things come to people that wait, and we have a fantastic a new coach for the football team, Brent Brennan. Can you know him, and you know his family really well. Can you talk to us a little bit about Brent and what he's going to bring to the University of Arizona football team?
I was a walk-on at the U of A. That was my sophomore year, and he was a graduate assistant. And he shared, like he talked about in the interview, he shared an equipment closet with David Phipp. And he was a really hardworking guy. He was really personable. And he would take time out of every time he saw you, no matter if you were, you know, Keith Smith, where you were a guy like me that was just a guy to help the team. And he would ask if you're doing okay, what he could do to help you, make sure that everything was lined up with your grades and school. And he's a really, really good guy. He's a down-to-earth guy, like a regular, good, hardworking guy.
And he went on over to San Jose State with Coach Tomey there for a while and then got the head job himself and has done a great job, been back to Tucson once to play in the Arizona Bowl. What kind of an offense does he run and what kind of a team do they present and what do you think he'll bring to the University of Arizona?
Well, the first part is he went with Rich Ellerson over to Cal Poly.
All right.
And what's important about that is Coach Ellerson is one of the best football minds that you'll ever be around. And if he thinks he was good enough to be one of his first hires, then, you know, he's a special guy. As far as the offense and stuff that he runs, each year that you watch him, it has been a little bit different. But in that situation that they're in, they have to scheme up and they have to coach up to compete in the levels that they compete in because their fundraising program is to go play the bigger teams, you know, to get those checks. And they were very, very competitive. And they're competitive because he's going to make sure that they're detailed and that those kids are really tough and they're fundamentally sound.
Well, Sixto talks about, you know, the University of Arizona football being a thing where people come together. So tell us what your perspective on that, Sixto, of why football is so important to the city of Tucson.
Yeah, over the years recently, there's been a lot of turmoil amongst many residents in the city. The Republicans hate the Democrats and vice versa. This, you know, the criminals don't like the cops and what have you. But what I see at the U of A is all the factions, different factions, can come together to one stadium and root for the beloved Wildcats. You know, they put their differences aside for that time. And I think that is awesome. And that's one of the ingredients that keeps this company or this city together is the Arizona Wildcats.
For sure. I agree with 100% what he's saying, you know, and especially when they're winning, it was, you know, it's nice to see all the pride that's around the city for sure.
Yeah. Sixto and I had the good fortune of going over to the Alamo Bowl and watching the team play and oh boy, what an exciting game and what an exciting finish to the season. And it looks like the new coach has already endeared himself to the players. We hope that portal doesn't suck too many of them into the black hole of moving on. But that's a bad thing and a good thing because as some of our good players might jump to that portal, he has the attraction of bringing a bunch of new people in that would come because he's now the head coach at Arizona. So what do you think about the new lineup in the new conference and how Arizona will fare football-wise with new teams and a new perspective on alignment for the new conference?
Well, I think it's going to be good to be in the Big 12. Obviously, there's just a plethora of football players in Texas that you can recruit. And they can combine Texas with Tucson, Phoenix, and then obviously he has a great connection in the Bay Area there. You know, those are the kind of the landmarks for where Coach Tomey hit. And then Coach Tomey went out and got, you know, some of the Polynesian kids from Samoa and from Hawaii. So if you could kind of put those components together, they're good. But playing in that conference will allow those guys to be able to recruit better because they're going to be in those areas more.
I saw that they published the lineup of who the coaches are. He hasn't set, obviously, his offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator yet, but that'll happen in probably the next 72 hours. That'll probably be filled out. But he did have Chuck Cecil and Ricky Hundley still on the roster, the coaching roster. Why is having a guy like you or those guys that were All-Americans as part of the program, how important is that to the legacy of the bear down feeling that football players have for the Wildcat family?
Well, what it does is it puts a bridge together to allow the alumni to feel like they have a part of it because they have a voice. You know, those guys can talk to, you know, Coach Cecil was over at CDO a couple days ago and we could talk to him and it was different because he's one of us, you know, he's a cat. So that's really important. But the biggest hire there is, you know, if he can secure Dwayne Aquina.
Right.
I mean, Dwayne Aquina's as good as gold. I mean, I don't think he's ever changed anything besides getting better and better and better in his craft. And he was already the best there is. The only thing you see different is the mustache got a little grayer. The fire is there. The knowledge is there. And everywhere he goes, it turns to gold because he's just a super duper human.
Yeah. What are the prospects for Coach McKee now that Dusty's gone from Canyon Del Oro? What is Coach McKee going to do? And do you have any big announcements for us about where you might land in the next round?
No, I was excited because I got a house to paint there off of Broadway and Camino Seco. And so it's got two coats on the fascia board will be the first process. Yeah. But
hey, it's okay to make a shameless plug for quality painting, which you and your family run and own and operate. And yes, you did paint my house. And yes, my house is beautiful. So
it is a great place. But I'll tell you, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. I have some ideas for sure. I want to definitely coach. I was out of it the 1 year, and I just didn't feel like I was the person that I could be and wanted to be. I'm trying to do as many things with the family, and those are great, but you have so much competitiveness and so much, you're so routine to football. So I'm going to definitely coach. You know, hopefully it'll be up here at CDL, but we'll see. We've got to go through all that process, and then if not, then we'll jump on somebody's staff and we'll have a great time. But I was really fortunate that Dusty allowed me to coach with his guys. And he didn't need me. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame guy. And U of A should hire him. I'm telling you that right now. He would be outstanding in any capacity that they want. He's a first-class guy, great worker. But then he's got great coaches that are on his staff. He's got great kids, great parents. And the place is special because of what he helped build there. You know, so I'm just happy they let me tag along.
Coach Brennan might want to think about hiring Coach McKee as part of his staff. I have to tell you, I was speaking to my son, Kevin, who was the quarterback that you talked about last night, and told him I would be talking with you on the air. And he sends his regards, and both Casey and Kevin think you're a pretty special guy. I think that six of those kids think the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. You're part of our family, Scott. You know, we've known you a long time, and by the way, you did paint my house too, several years ago.
I did, and the interesting thing, guys, for both you guys, you know, we don't have any success, and we don't do those things without what you guys both did. I was in the first interview I've ever been in my life, and you have Chief Molina was one of the members on the board to select the coach at Pueblo High School, and you want to talk about it, an intimidating thing when you first walk in as a 23-year-old kid, and you're looking at the police chief, right? And he's asking you how can you better the school and his kids. And you know, we didn't win a lot of football games down there, but I'm telling you what, we really had a great time, and I still have a lot of relationship with those guys. And then I was fortunate. I mean, Doc, you know, you came in and did all that stuff, organizing the booster clubs and making our place great, and led to all those playoff runs. So, and both families, as far as your sons, they could both just play. I mean, they could really play. They're great, great football players and great guys. So I owe you guys more than anything in the world. But, yeah, it would be great to continue to coach kids like that, for sure.
Well, thank you, and thank you for telling us about the new coach of the University of Arizona football team, Brent Brennan. And we look forward to going to football games. Sixth and I sit together and have a great time watching great football. You're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Jump in Tucson. We're with Coach Scott McKee. Thank you, Coach, for all you do. We'll be back next Monday with more U of A, and we'll be back on Friday with business success stories on Jump in Tucson.